Welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guests are renowned sports columnist for USA Today and various broadcast outlets and author of On Her Game, Caitlin Clark and the Revolution in Women's Sports, the great, the one and only Christine Brennan. Now, remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. We'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. Tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Quince, Green Chef, and Mint Mobile, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. Hey, James, in a series of bad weeks, this may have been Donald Trump's worst. Polls keep getting worse on job approval and on his policies, economy, immigration, and the Iranian war. He was slapped down by several courts, and like the demagogue he is, showed up to be the first president to show up for a Supreme Court argument over birthright citizenship. In the end, he's going to lose. And he showed his contempt for the Constitution anew by issuing an executive order curtailing the use of mail ballots in the election. That's unconstitutional. The elections in America are run by states and subject to congressional, not executive, changes. Worse, he got himself in a lose-lose Iranian war situation. If he decides to pull out, which I suspect he really wants to do, is what he cares most about, is his own standing in the midterm elections. He said this was about regime change, eliminating nuclear capabilities of Iran and ending their ability to commit terrorism. Actually, he struck out on all three. If, however, he goes the other way and sends in the 82nd Airborne Division and Marines to take Kog Island and try to open Hormuz, there will be a bloody war that will make Iraq look like child's play. This is a disastrous choice. The first one is less disastrous than the second, but still bad, all self-created.
Take everything you said and multiply it by five, and you're probably hitting about where it is. I mean, I don't think we can describe it. And the other thing is, I don't think there's anything he can do. I think the American people have just cashed in on this guy, and for good reason. And the stuff in Iran, adventurism in Iran, is an utter disaster. No one wants to have anything to do with it. He's stuck with high oil prices. I mean, he can walk away, but I don't know what good that's going to do. And Iran has now discovered it has just very powerful thing in the Straits of Hormuz. I mean, just like China discovered it when he fooled with the trade, they discovered it had rare earth metals. Everything that he turns, it's not that it doesn't work. It just turns to complete shit. Anything he touches, he's the reverse Midas touch.
Yeah, look, Iran is a bad actor. It's repressive, it's dangerous, but it infuriates me when Saudi dictator MBS tells Trump, finish them all. Saudi Arabia has the seventh largest military budget in the world, as big as the UK, larger than France or South Korea. Israel has military might and extraordinary intelligence. If Iran is to be finished off, let them do it. There rather should not be any American blood or treasure shed anymore over there. They're perfectly capable of handling this. And finally, James, this is one that really got me this week. An argument between Pete Hegseth and Pope Leo about the morality of all. Can you imagine a bigger mismatch than Pope Leo and Pete Hegseth? Reminder, our Secretary of Defense is a guy who impregnated his second wife while married to his first, then impregnated his third wife while married to his second, and in his spare time, he was accused of sexually assaulting another woman at a California conference and ended up paying her $50,000. He's going to talk about the morality of something? His personal minister, who he brought to pray at the Pentagon, is Douglas Wilson. Now, Douglas Wilson, people ought to know about. He's a Christian nationalist who doesn't think women should vote, wants to repeal the 19th Amendment, doesn't believe Jews or Muslims should hold public office since we're a Christian nation, and wrote a book, he co-authored, which claims that slavery, it was slavery that created the best bond between whites and blacks. And Pete Hegseth is out there talking about morality.
Well, another person took on Pope Leo's theology, and that was one Mike Johnson, who I would like to tell people was his greatest religious influence and theological influence in his life was a man named Paul Pressler. Paul Pressler died recently, and he was a molester of young boys. That's a fact. So that's a theological mismatch that this administration is getting into, and they're not going to win it. They're losing on every front. You're exactly right, Albert. Nothing. It's just a pile of losers, and they're going to continue to lose.
The only thing they have going for them is a bunch of really cowardly, scared Republicans who have been unwilling to stand up so far. It's not going to matter come November because they're the ones that are going to be affected and hurt by that. Yeah. But, you know, at some point when he does things like declare an executive order against mail-in ballot. He had no constitutional right to do that. And then the demagoguery of showing up at the Supreme Court argument on birthright citizenship. Do you think, James, how often do you think Donald Trump has read and studied the 14th Amendment?
Well, Bobby Kennedy said he drew a perfect map of the Mideast with the population in Georgia Farm just from memory. Okay, if you believe that, you'll believe anything. He didn't know the 14th Amendment from, you know, August the 14th. And him being at the Supreme Court, we'd have to ask some legal people, but that's a separate branch of government. Has a president ever showed up at a Supreme Court argument?
Never. Uh-uh. First time ever today. It was pure demagoguery.
No principle at all, but they might take some offense that he's intruding on that branch of government, but I don't know. I still, for the life of me, can't understand what they're arguing about. The language is pretty clear. Not pretty clear. It's demonstrably clear.
Well, I'm going to try to put something out on Substack, or I may have already by the time this airs. Walter Dellinger wrote the most brilliant rebuttal of those who argue that birthright citizenship isn't covered by the 14th Amendment. He wrote it, I guess, 30 years ago, and it's every bit as compelling today. So it's an absurd argument.
Upgrade your style with Quince. It's unbelievable. And the thing is, until you actually wear it, you have no idea the quality. If you look at the price, the way it's put together, the lining, the everything that you see is all really first class. It's not just that it's ridiculously inexpensive, it's also ridiculously good quality stuff.
Yeah, you know, a thoughtfully built wardrobe relies on pieces that mix well and last. That's where Quince shines, with premium fabrics, considered design, and everyday essentials that feel dependable and effortless to wear, even as the seasons change. Quince has the everyday essentials we love with quality that lasts. Think lightweight cashmere sweaters, short sleeve Mongolian cashmere polos, linen bottoms and shorts, tees and 100% Pima cotton, and European jersey linen and more. These are the versatile pieces that make a wardrobe actually work season to season. It's affordable. Also, Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middlemen. So you're not paying for brand markup or fancy retail stores, just quality clothing. The cashmere is 100% Mongolian from the same stuff luxury brands use. The Pima cotton is long staple, which means it stays soft and doesn't pill. The European jersey linen is breathable and lightweight, and everything is built to hold up to regular wear and still look good. Their clothing is rated between 4.5 and 5 stars by thousands of people wearing it every day. Plus, the only partner with factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production is Quince. The fits are perfect, the fabrics are incredible, and the style and options are unmatched. James looks great in that cashmere sweater, but a Quince favorite is their luxurious stretch wool dress pants. They feel amazing. They are perfect for business on the hill, meeting a source, or watching March Madness in style. Rough these days. Stop overcomplicating your wardrobe. You don't need a closet full of options. You need a few pieces that actually work. Right now, go to quince.com/war room for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to build your wardrobe and love it, and you will. We also have some good news. Quince is now available in Canada, too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/war room for free shipping and 365-day returns. Again, quince.com/war room. The link is in our show notes. Hey, James, our guest today is one of America's great sports writers, Christine Brennan, columnist for USA Today, contributor to the PBS NewsHour and CNN, author of that fabulous book on Caitlin Clark, and just back from covering the Olympics. I have been a Brennan groupie for years. Christine, there is so much we could talk about basketball with two Final Fours this weekend. I love the game, despite the suffering my Duke wife went through last weekend. Players are great. Freshmen are off the charts. Compensation was long overdue. Yet I'm troubled when South Carolina coach Dawn Staley says when she visits a recruit, the first question always is, how much money do you want? Should I be troubled?
Yes. Yes, I think we all should be. Al and James, great to be with you both. Obviously, we've been friends forever. Al, you knew my dad. You interviewed my dad in Toledo way back in the day when he was a kingmaker in politics in Ohio.
And
just a delight. And Judy Woodruff is one of my favorite role models of all time. So great to be with you guys, James, and fabulous to see you at that great New Orleans Book Festival just a couple of weeks ago. I'm old school. You guys are old school. I mean, I think by definition, we've been around a long time, so we fall into that category. But I don't think old school is being wrong or even old. I think, absolutely, you said it, Al, the long overdue that college, student athletes, male, female, and all kinds of sports are getting some money. The idea, remember those days? I know your listeners and viewers do, where the grandmother died and the coach got in trouble for giving the kid $50 to get home to grandmother's funeral. That was ridiculous. And that was what the NCAA was doing. We've now swung, I think, completely the other way. And there needs to be some kind of control of transferring all the time and some kind of understanding of the money and maybe trust funds or some organization of this money. If you're 18, 19, 20 years old, male, female, you need help and you need an understanding of it. And also to realize that sports is not all about money. I don't think we're going to lose the fans, quite the opposite. You know, the numbers are great. TV viewership, college football, men's, women's basketball, TV viewership is really good. But it does take something away. And I do think a lot of fans are getting frustrated with this constant revolving door where your team that you love, all of a sudden, it's an entirely new team the next year. And what message, last thought on this, what message are we sending to these college students that if something goes wrong, just leave? Understandable in some cases, for sure. They do have the right. The college coaches are leaving. Absolutely, they have the right. But some order to it and some sense for those young athletes to stick it out a little, give it another shot, don't leave because, you know, you're not starting right away. Those are the kind of issues, I think. And the money, obviously, is there. I'm glad it's there for the women as well as the men. But it is, as Dawn Staley is a very smart and really great coach. She knows what she's talking about.
When she's worried, then I'm a little bit worried. Yeah. Let's talk about the men's game first. You are a detached journalist, and I know damn well you're secretly cheering for Michigan, or your dad from heaven would wreak havoc upon you. Jim Brennan James was a great political leader who I knew, 40 some years ago from Toledo, and was just fabulous And I know he is so proud of his daughter. But let me ask you, now that Mike Krzyzewski and Jay Wright have retired, isn't UConn's Danny Hurley the premier men's coach? I love his bench antics. He hit a referee with 0.3 seconds left. He said, "I thought the ref was trying to chest bump me." And he's a little bit crazy, but he's one hell of a coach, Christine.
Oh, he is. I mean, he's now taken a team to the Final Four, the men's Final Four, 3 of the last 4 years. And he won 2 of them. And, his team gave us one of the great shots of all time in NCAA basketball history the other day to beat Judy's, Duke Blue Devils. Exactly. And from a basketball family, a great heritage. His brother, of course, at Duke for years, as a player, obviously, and a coach as well. And so I think, I will say yes. I think, if you're just looking at performance, and that's what you gentlemen do on the political side, that's what I do on the sports side, you can't argue with the success that UConn has had the last few years. And Hurley, because it is such a turbulent time.
And yet, he's only the second best coach in Storrs, Connecticut. The best coach being Gino Armetta, who's going for his 13th title this weekend. Tell us about Gino.
I know Gino pretty well, interviewed him over the years. We've had some good conversations on the phone. He's a character. In fact, you guys should have him on your show. Gino Auriemma is a quote machine. He just won't stop talking. He's a walking, talking soundbite. And he has a lot to say, and it's interesting. It's really, he brings stats to the microphone, and he was talking about the trouble with 3-point shooting in the women's game over the last few days in the tournament. And he was saying, well, you got, your shoot-arounds at 6:30 in the morning. No wonder you're not going to be crisp and sharp in the game. Those kinds of things. So he's been the conscience of the sport in many ways. He's been running the sport. I mean, pick not only the Olympic coach, but with the UConn influence is extraordinary throughout the game. He knows it. He gets it. But he's fun to spar with. I mean, when he was denigrating Caitlin Clark and saying, oh, she's going to have trouble and the kid's not built for the WNBA, and I called him on that, for my book on her game. I wanted to get his comments. And he goes, maybe. And he didn't say he was wrong, but he was, one of those macho kind of guys you can also punch in the shoulder and laugh with. And I love that. And when I say macho, he's also one of the great forces in women's sports history. So there's that. But he didn't recruit Caitlin Clark, but he had Paige Beckers. And now Caitlin Clark, of course, has become the biggest name in women's basketball, biggest name in women's team sports ever. And you could make the case she's the biggest name in women's sports ever. Obviously, tennis probably excluded with Serena Williams, Billie Jean King, Chris Evert, et cetera. Venus, too. So, but you can have that kind of conversation with him, Alan James, and he is willing to spar with you. Basketball coaches do that in a way that NFL coaches and college football coaches never do. And I think that's one of the reasons basketball seems so accessible to so many millions of fans.
And he's a tempering influence on Danny Hurley. I mean, my God, just think about that for a minute. You mentioned the fabulous Caitlin Clark, who you did a book on. This year there are some really, I think, terrific college women basketball players as we head into this weekend. Sarah Strong and Lauren Betts from our community of Washington, D.C., AZ Fudd, and then from my kids' school, Sidwell Friends, Kiki Rice. But, Carlos Boozer on the men's side is really as big a figure, I think, as Cooper Flagg was last year. But there's nobody on the women's side who really has the focus, I don't think, of Caitlin Clark. Why is that? Is it just that she was so special?
Yeah, she is. She was and is now in the pros, and the interest is carried over. When you look at how she played, chucking it from the parking lot, right? And it goes in. She's a basketball player for sure, but she's really an entertainer. And what she has done is make women's basketball intriguing to men who never cared about it. I would do radio shows 20, 30 years ago when I'd cover women's basketball. Obviously, I covered a lot of other stuff, but for the Washington Post and now USA Today. And I'd be on the show and there'd be guys calling and laughing. Oh, it's just jump balls and rolling around on the floor. And there was some truth to that. 30 years ago. But I would defend women's basketball, and it had to grow, and Title IX, and it's all, you know, interconnected. Well, it has grown, and the game is so much better. But still, a lot of men in particular, and we know men, you know, majority of sports fans are men in all ways, and TV viewers, et cetera. And men kind of were like, you know, they'd still say, oh, that's just not, you know, they don't dunk, and that's not, can't compare to the men's game. Well, what we didn't realize that it wasn't the dunk, it was the three. And the way Caitlin Clark hits those threes as if time is running out, and I have logo threes jumping off the page in the book where the story of how she thinks, how she just wants to run, she wants to play with pace, a way that we don't see very much in the women's game. And then we see her just, you know, heaving the ball from those, you know, the incredible logos in half court, basically, and it's going in, and she's getting over 40 points a game as she's taking Iowa to those two great straight final games, NCAA championships in 23 and 24. No one thought Iowa would ever make it. And the team stayed together for 4 years. You didn't have transferring. She didn't leave and go somewhere else. You put it all together, Al, and she was just the right person for the right time with NIL money. So the commercials, you know, the State Farm commercials, she'd be playing in the game, they'd go to a commercial, and she'd be there in the State Farm all in the same uniform. So she never left your view. And then she delivered time and again with some of the great, you know, high wire act at the circus kind of performance that we just haven't seen in the women's game. Paige Beckers is a great player, but she doesn't do what Caitlin does to attract the average person or the men's basketball fan that never cared about women's basketball until Caitlin. And for those who might be saying, well, wait a minute, yeah, but what about the great names of the past? Well, again, I wish that Cheryl Miller had been Caitlin Clark. I wish that Maya Moore had been, but it didn't happen. They couldn't fill up their, you know, Maya Moore couldn't fill up her, you know, more than half of basically of the Minnesota Lynx arena, even as great as she was. And she's Caitlin's favorite player. And you look at the numbers, and these numbers are startling. And I know your numbers guys from politics. In 2022, the NCAA final was South Carolina and UConn. So blue bloods, right? 4.85 million viewers, 4.85 million in 2022. Caitlin Clark takes Iowa to the final game in 2023 against, of course, James's LSU. And of course, LSU wins. And that is 9.9 million. So more, you know, more than double. And then 2024, Caitlin's senior year, 18.9 million. Watched Iowa again. South Carolina won that game against Iowa. The men, the next night, guys, 14.8 million. 18.9 to 14.8. I don't think we'll ever see that again. Hope I'm wrong. But 4 million more people watched the women's final, NCAA final, than watched the men's. A sentence that I never thought I would be able to say. And guess what? After Caitlin goes to the WNBA, it drops back. Not much higher than before, 8.6 million. But it drops more than half without Caitlin Clark. The story is Caitlin Clark. She is the real deal. She is the, you know, the draw of all draws in women's basketball and really throughout women's sports.
She really is. James Carville.
So, Christina, I would say, I'll call Coach Gino not one of the great coaches in the history of women's college basketball, which he obviously is. I'll call him one of the great coaches of any sport. If you took one loss percentage, championships won, and the growth of the sport since he entered it, I don't think that I don't know if anybody could kind of measure up. I mean, John Wooden didn't make college basketball. It was a big deal before he got there. But the question I want to hone in is college basketball in the tournament, it has this, well, anybody can do it, the mid-majors, the upset, the bracket buses. All eight teams have something in common in the Final Fours this year. You know what it is? They're all state universities. And with the exception of UConn, and even UConn, football is the massive generator of funds for these programs. And how would you react if they became a 28 or 32 team super conference? And we just got them and let everybody else compete too. But Butler's not going to beat anybody anymore.
Right.
It was great. You're a great story. Jim Larranega, what a great story that was. That's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
It is.
Good, bad, or indifferent. And the same thing is true in women's basketball. I'm going to let you talk for a long time. I look at it, and there are seven teams that are really good, frankly, the rest of them are not that good. I mean, the disparity between the UConns and to some extent, clearly it's our LSU, it's our in that class, but they're just going to keep they're just going to keep dominating, and we shouldn't keep the fiction up.
I agree. The money that these, you made a great point. The football, obviously football is football. And I love college football. I mean, as much as, you know, I focused on women's sports, I've written way more and talked way more about men's sports in my career, of course, and covered the NFL and all that stuff. So the, you know, that football is king. And when you've got the Big Ten, which of course now stretches coast to coast, and the Big Ten network and the money that each school makes just off that, it's extraordinary, and that can then help fund a lot of other things, even though a lot of the football programs lose money too. So you're right. You know, when you look at that, there's a big like 20, 22, 25 schools that are really the behemoths. And a couple of them are, you know, are involved here. Clearly, certainly Texas comes to mind on the women's side. You know, we'll see about what happens with the various conferences. But I think you're right. The days of a George Mason, the Butlers, my goodness, Florida Atlantic a couple years ago. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we're wrong, but it's going to be really hard for those schools to make it back to a Final Four, men's in particular, but certainly women's. I'm glad that the big schools care about women's basketball, because back in the day when the smaller schools, you know, the Louisiana Techs and the Old Dominions were really good at women's basketball, it was because the big schools, the big conferences, didn't care yet about women's sports. So that's an interesting conversation, too, we don't need to go into. But it's the money that is generated by those programs that then you can pay the athletes. The transfer portal is so real. South Carolina, 5 new faces this year for Dawn Staley. Already people are transferring. You know, Iowa's losing a young freshman, Iowa women. Iowa State's losing players. The transfer portal is real and active, and a huge story in women's as well as men's basketball. So you are 100% right where the money is in these programs, in these big conferences. And I agree. I think as much as I'm a Big Ten person from Northwestern, you know, let's see how this plays out. But Northwestern will never and never should have the money or want to pay the money that Ohio State will pay or Michigan. That's just not going to happen. So will we see Northwestern and Duke and Vanderbilt and Stanford all come together, maybe with a few Ivies? You know, who knows? But I agree with you. It's the money is everything, and the big schools are the ones that are going to be dominating year in and year out.
So I think the reason they're embracing women's basketball, because the fans like it. It's a popular sport. It's a good sport. In some ways, and this is just me, when I watch, and I generally watch the Final Four, a little bit of the tournament, I can't tell you that I watch women's college basketball on Wednesday, Thursday night that much, but neither I watch men's college basketball, that matter. But that's a really fast-moving game, and I think it's more lightly officiated than men's game. You have that sense that you watch it a lot more than I do. But these girls, they run and gun, man. Boom, boom.
Without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, Title IX is, I don't want to get too much into public policy, although I know that's you guys have done that over the years. But Title IX is almost 54 years old. Signed by Richard Nixon in June of 1972, that opened the floodgates for girls and women to play sports in this country, right?
Greatest things that Congress ever did is Title IX. In high school, like Central High School, and what's Title IX women's sports?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I went to high school, girls basketball was 3-3. If you were a guard, you couldn't cross half court. You know, the Mighty Max, the Immaculata College. Man, go get the Mighty Max.
No, you're right. And my goodness, in Iowa, one of the reasons that Caitlin Clark is so popular and why Iowa loves girls and women's basketball is because that 6-on-6, or 3-on-1 side, 3-on-the-other side. I mean, folks, for those who don't know about this, I have a little bit in the book, a little bit of a dive into it. I don't distract too much from the Caitlin Clark story. But the fact is that, like, you had a player who might be great, but she could only play defense, and then another player could only play offense. So when they were graduating from high school, name a college coach that would ever recruit them, because they only knew how to either play offense or defense. And so that is why it's gone away. But it's right out of Hoosiers. In fact, I thought there should be a movie on this. The idea of the little towns, you know, had the, you know, the little hayloft basket, and the girls were doing their chores, and they'd play for their little Iowa City, you know, town, farm town. And then they'd make it to the, you know, championship, and they'd all stream into Des Moines, and they'd pack that arena in Des Moines to watch the girls 6-on-6 high school basketball. It's a really charming story. And that love of the women, girls game in high school, women's game in college, those are the shoulders that Caitlin Clark stood on. And that's why you saw the attendance and the interest in the Big Ten, the love of Caitlin that really then branched around the country. And you're right. It's changed so dramatically. The nation has fallen in love, I believe, with what we've created because of Title IX. Cool. And, you know, that girl you see in the kitchen every morning, the granddaughter who's got, you know, the soccer bag over her shoulder, but then she's got her volleyball gear for later, or lacrosse, or whatever. Or the one you wave at on the driveway as she goes off, and you see her at age 6 and 7, then she's a high school star, then she gets a college scholarship. That's all because of Richard Nixon signing that law, the Great Birch Bayh, and Patsy Mink, who fought for that legislatively. And that's what we're talking about here. And that's why the women's game has grown so exponentially. And of course, you're talking about athletes like Mikey Sherrill, the new governor of New Jersey. Gretchen Whitmer played sports. They learned those life lessons, winning at a young age, losing at a young age, teamwork, sportsmanship. I think we're creating, you know, millions of female Bill Bradleys who are going to run the country over the next 20, 30 years, at least in my humble opinion.
Good. I just turned it back now. I like women's basketball. I want a UConn, South Carolina final. Shit, let's give the public what they want.
Right.
Don't say I can coach a team now, right? That's where sports, at the big stage is, what, you know, with the big team. But anyway, Al, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, let's go to the games, Christine. Size up UConn against South Carolina and UCLA against Texas on Friday night.
Right, so this is the women's Final Four, and yeah, James, I'll give you what you want. You get it right away, and you know clearly another factor that you see getting the TV ratings obviously went up, you know, like into the stratosphere for Caitlin Clark and Iowa against South Carolina and LSU, and Kim Mulkey, your girl, you know, she's a great coach, and she won that one big time. I mean, great, great season they had. And but it's because you know the characters, right? You know the names. I mean, the personalities. That, you know, sports is a personality business. Tom Brady, LeBron, Tiger Woods, obviously, having real personal troubles again. But whatever the case might be, we want to know these athletes or coaches feel comfortable with them. So, yes, UConn is 38-0. Got a few notes here just because I don't have it all committed to memory. And 35-3 for South Carolina. You know, I think UConn's going to win. If anyone can beat UConn, it is Dawn Staley coached team. This is a different team for Dawn Staley. As I said, she brought in after losing, after, you know, getting, you know, pummeled in the final 82-59. She said, okay, we need to get better outside shooting. We need length. We need some height, you know, all of that to try to compete against UConn. But as great as South Carolina has been and as terrific a coach as Dawn Staley is, one of the greats of all time men's women's game, I mean, no doubt about it. And also, you know, incredible career, Olympic gold medalist several times over, carried the U.S. flag in the 2004 Athens Olympics opening ceremony. That's Dawn Staley. I mean, she's a real American treasure.
Texas versus UCLA is just the undercard.
Well, exactly. So, you know, I'll go with Connecticut as much as because it's just the firepower, as you mentioned, strong and AZ Fudd, you know, and we'll see. But Kiki Rice also, as you mentioned, from the D.C. area, from Sidwell, and Susan Rice's niece, of course, going into the political world. That's UCLA and that against Texas. And the biggest names to watch there, Al, Lauren Batt, 6'7". You know, she's averaging 17 points.
UCLA, right.
Yeah, 8.6 rebounds for UCLA. UCLA's lost one game this year, guys, and it was to Texas in November. So here we go. UCLA and Texas, Madison Booker, the terrific Texas star, 19 points per game. I have picked in our family bracket. We don't bet, don't have any money, but just for fun, I got UCLA, Big Ten person that I am, even though it's strange to say UCLA is in the Big Ten, but they are. But I'll go with UCLA over Texas. I'll go with UConn over South Carolina. I hope they're really good games for the fans. Last year, all blowouts, the two Final Four games, I was there. And then the final, just, you know, not competitive. And let's hope that these are entertaining games. And if we get UConn and UCLA, well, then, you know, then we're going to see, obviously, we've seen all number one seeds here. This is chalk all the way. So you really can't go wrong with any two in the final.
Well, let's go to that other gender. in which we have UConn versus another Big Ten team, Illinois. And then we have Jim Brennan's Michigan against Arizona. How do you see those games?
Well, you're talking to a Big Ten girl here, right? So as you said, growing up in Toledo, we had season tickets in Ann Arbor for Michigan football.
A Big Ten girl, unless Ohio State is playing.
You know me so well, Al. Yes, yes. That Michigan-Ohio State rivalry is real and lives on in the Brennan household to this day. I'd love to say, again, as an observer, not as a journalist, the Big Ten side of me, you know, that'd be great to see Michigan and Illinois. I mean, that just would be, you know, a dream. And trivia question or trivia, a point of trivia, that the first time you could have more than one team from a conference in the NCAA tournament, it was 32 teams back then, it was 1976. And guess what? It was Indiana and Michigan. The Big Ten ended up with the final, and that was Indiana, the great Quinn Buckner and Kent Benson team against Michigan beating
1985, you had Georgetown and Villanova and St. John's in the semifinals. So you had three Big East schools back then.
Exactly, exactly. But again, 9 years earlier, you know, it was
right.
Yes,
right.
And no, but excellent point. And of course, as an ACC person, I know you could go on this topic with ACC schools that have done so well. So for
I'm
the Big
also
Ten,
a Big East person, so I go both ways. But James Carville,
you know, the increase.
I'm sorry, Christine, I interrupted you. Please
go ahead. No, I was going to say increases your chances when you're cheering for, you know, everyone. But the Big Ten hasn't won a men's NCAA tournament since Michigan State in 2000. So that would be something. I think UConn, the question for the men, UConn, incredible performance. And you got, of course, you know, you've got Braylon Mullins, Mr. Indiana, you know, high school basketball, coming back now to Indianapolis to play with UConn after that, you know, game-winning shot of all shots. Everyone sees that as the undercard, right? UConn and Illinois, you know, they were a two seed and a three seed. Illinois was three and UConn two versus the other game. You know, just the behemoths, right? Michigan and Arizona. But I'm always wary of presuming that the winner of Michigan-Arizona wins the whole thing, right? So I'll stick with the Big Ten, Michigan and Illinois, but I wouldn't be surprised at all. Arizona is a terrific team. And UConn, you know, has got that momentum. But I'll stick with the Big Ten, all Big Ten final, and I'll say Michigan will win the whole thing.
It's not a good idea to bet against Danny Hurley in a Final Four. But you make good points. James Carville, wrap this fascinating conversation up.
Ohio State, Michigan football game. I grew up in Toledo, which is right on the thing. You got one foot in each thing. You got, who do you pull forward? The Buckeyes and Wolverines.
Michigan, 100 times out of 100. Keep in mind, geography, Michigan is only, Ann Arbor is only 45 minutes from Ottawa Hills, our suburb of Toledo. And Columbus is, what, 3.5-hour drive. So 100% Michigan. But purple all the way, Northwestern first and foremost, of course.
So before I go, in sports writers and commentators have this, everything is dead. It's this sport is gone. And, you know, Sally Jenkins had a piece today. There's nothing wrong with college basketball. It's doing just fine. Thank you. And then I would read 10 years ago, 8 years ago, baseball is dead. Well, the World Series got twice the viewers as the NBA Finals. But we were all into, baseball was a dead sport. But the truth of the matter is, football is going to be where it is, and it's going to stay there for the foreseeable future. But I think the future of all other sports is pretty good. I mean, I look across at what's happening, and big thing at LSU in a big sport, and watch this, women's gymnastics, they drop. But they really draw. This is the next women's basketball, I think.
Yeah. Well, they're superstars. Again, what we said a few minutes ago, their personalities are so well known. They are influencers. They've got, you know, millions of followers on Instagram, and they're making NIL money because of the Instagram. You know, that's where the sponsors want to reach, especially young women. So you'll see the Instagram thing, women's basketball, women's volleyball is getting bigger all the time. And gymnastics, you're absolute, you know, you're right. And watch flag football. The NFL's behind it. They're pushing it big time for girls and women as well as boys and men. It's in the Olympics in 2028 in LA. And if the NFL's behind it, it's already become a high school sport, flag football for girls in, I think, almost half of our states. The other half will soon follow. So flag football is going to be a very big deal over the next 10, 20 years for girls in particular, because the NFL's smart and knows if they get the young girls to love football, well, they're going to be running the households and making the family decisions for their households for the next 50 or 60 years. And the NFL wants to be a part of that conversation for women as well as men. So, you know, and of course, women are already big NFL fans. But without a doubt, I think most sports are niche sports, and that's okay. Everything, you know, we remember the days of Mary Tyler Moore and MASH, the last MASH, you know, and the ratings. Well, those ratings don't happen. We don't have three channels anymore. And so sports, I think baseball gets it. Other sports get it. It's okay to have a little slice of the pie. And of course, streaming is now a huge part of this conversation. The NFL is the end all and be all. It's numero uno. And every other sport is there trying to get that slice. And women's sports is doing better than ever. Because again, you know, that 10-year-old girl 20 years ago is now 30. She may or may not have kids, married, not, whatever. Well, but she's going to start watching women's sports in a way that her mother and her grandmother never did, never had the opportunity to. So I agree with you. I think sports are just fine. And I don't think we can declare anything dead. I think they're all doing okay.
No. I hope we don't have to wait for another Final Four before we have you publish out. I've just enjoyed talking to you and seeing you. You know, you're very, very unique in perspective, and you've watched all of this evolve and grow. You know, it's not the same thing when you started covering this and started being a sports writer, interested in sports. It's really growing. Hats off to you. Hats off to these women athletes.
Thank you, James.
One of the reasons sports is in such good shape is because of Christine Brennan. You know, last night I told you I went to this event at Maryland. George Solomon, the great sports editor of the Washington Post, talked about all the talent he had over those 28 years. And Christine Brennan, you were at the top of that list. So I want to tell you, we really appreciate you being with us today. We'll look at these. Gosh, we got what? We got eight? One, two, three, four. We got what? Six games to watch over the weekend?
Yes. Two women's on Friday, two men's on Saturday, right. Women's, and yes, and then the final
we'll
for the men.
We'll be there. Thank you so much. You are a terrific guest.
See, George, ask him who was the best sports writer he ever had at the Washington Post. And I'm going to tell you the name he's going to tell you. John Ed Bradley.
I love John Ed Bradley. So for those who don't know, LSU's own, played football, right? He was David Woodley's center, correct?
Right.
Am I correct?
He was in the 79, but he's like, is a recluse somewhere in St. Landry Parish now, and he wrote a book. And it was like, it never rains in Texas. But literally one of the great sports books of all time. George said,
well, James, you better tell George, because George last night said that Christine and Michael Wilbon and who we had, I guess Tony, but someone else were as great as. Anyway, Christine, you are fabulous.
No, thank you.
We will stay in touch and we will cheer together this weekend. Are you going out to the Final Four?
No, not covering. I'm gearing up to go to the Masters cover that. But I'll certainly be watching and seeing how it goes. You know, the journalists, there's no cheering in the press box, but, you know, certainly we'll enjoy it from the living room or the family room.
Great. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Eat good the way you should with Green Chef. It's unbelievable. I wish I had one now. I'm having a meat bunch of, I'm doing the podcast, but it's not going to be as healthy and good, and it's not going to be the same cost. I wish I had this right now. I'd eat it instantly.
Well, I don't know about you all out there, but we're fed up with so-called healthy meals that mislead you with nice words, very nice words, not reflected in the ingredients.
and viral social media trends that don't pay off. That's why we're big fans of Green Chef. They cut through the noise as a trusted authority in clean eating and deliver only real farm-sourced ingredients that make you feel as good as they taste. Trust every bite from Green Chef with over 40 clean, customizable weekly recipes designed to give you peace of mind. It saves so much time, and there's always something for your family, especially if they're picky eaters. Stop compromising on clean and delicious eating. Every Green Chef box delivers certified organic produce and responsibly sourced proteins and seafood, so you avoid ultra-processed fillers and other junk. Their approach is grounded in science and is designed to help you reach your wellness goals with options like Mediterranean high protein, high fiber, plant-based, and more. All clinically proven to support healthier habits. They take care of the research, meal planning, and grocery shopping, so you don't have to. Say goodbye to checkout lines and tricky recipes and start enjoying low prep, low mess meals for every lifestyle and schedule. Take control of your health without the stress. And if you're as busy as we are, it'll change your life after switching to Green Chef. Now, we have a great excuse to prepare food for friends and families. The chicken with garlic charred rice, apricot pan sauce, and roasted almonds is so good. It's like having a personal chef who delivers it right to the door. As industry leaders in sustainability, Green Chef cuts food waste by 20% compared to traditional grocery shopping and offsets 100% of delivery emissions. Feels great, creating better habits for yourself and for the planet. So head to greenchef.com/50warroom and use code 50warroom to get 50% off your first month, then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50warroom at greenchef.com/50warroom. The link is in our show notes. Hey, now for the outrages of the week. There's so many. I was watching cable television over the weekend, checking reports on the No Kings rally. On CNN, a right-wing pundit named Scott Jennings said the rally, No Kings rally, featured a hammer and sickle in New York, Hezbollah and Hamas flags, and trans signs. That, he declared, is representative of what the Democratic Party is all about. That, Mr. Jennings, is a lie. Imagine his reaction if a studio pundit on a Trump rally said he spotted or she spotted Nazi armbands and signs, Ku Klux Klan placards, and white nationalists everywhere. And that's what the Republican Party is all about. You know, I don't know if Jennings actually saw any of this or not, but in talking to people who attended those rallies, I'm not sure he talked to any, there were independents, Democrats, even Republicans, peacefully exercising their constitutional rights. 8 million of them across the country, small towns, rural communities, as well as large cities. Now, Mr. Jennings, once a lobbyist and a top Mitch McConnell aide, who saw there was more gold in the Trump Hills and easily converted. He seems to get his talking points from Trump land and certainly not from reporting. So some might know for years that I parried with right-wing pundit Robert Novak. We disagreed on most everything. Politics, sports, taxes, even the weather. But I knew how smart he was, and I enjoyed exchanging views with him. Really, I liked him, and I miss him. The difference between someone like Jennings and the late Robert Novak is Novak was a tireless reporter who didn't tailor his views to pander or to make money. You could disagree with his views, as I did on most everything, but you knew that he worked hard at it and he knew what he was talking about, even though he might have been wrong. That's why he was known as the Prince of Darkness. That's something that the Jennings of the world just don't understand.
I could hear from a lobbyist, or he's still a lobbyist. Do you have any reason to think that he's not lobbying now?
I don't know. I saw he was a lobbyist, and I didn't want to say he was lobbying now because I wasn't sure, but he might be.
He's lobbyist about lobbyists, but he actually is a useful idiot.
I mean, because CNN has him on it, some idea of once or whatever. And the guy is so stupid and makes such vapid arguments. I don't want him to be off. I mean, he's probably like the smartest one over there. I mean, what did Hammond Sickle? Just pick. Did they have a trans bathroom there, Scott? Did they have, you know, how many? Whatever. They're all the same shit, and people are just tired of the same old crap. And I got news for you, Scott. You ain't going to do very well in November at all.
True.
For my outrage, I just can't get enough of this guy, Greg Phillips, who is the head of the response and recovery at FEMA. I had no idea. He was the guy that said he was transported 40 miles away to a Waffle House one time in Rome, Georgia. And then he was transported, I think, 50 miles and ended up in a ditch in Georgia by a Protestant church. And, of course, people appropriately laughed at the guy and mocked it. And he said, or bigots, I have no idea what this guy's talking about. But if you're a good citizen, just look him up in Wikipedia. That's the safest thing to do. And as soon as the Democrats win the House and the Senate back, whoever the appropriate committee is, drag this son of a bitch up there, and because this is a key position. FEMA recovery and responses, you got to be very talented, very knowledgeable, and it helps to become sane. And we don't need a FEMA director that's transported, you know, 50 miles to a ditch. We need somebody sitting there organizing a response. This guy's a fucking idiot. Jesus.
James, I agree they ought to do that, and definitely. And the hardest decision that Democrats and oversight investigatory committees are going to have to make come next January and February is how to pick which people they have up there, because there's so many choices. This guy ought to be one.
He's going to be like a mosquito. Where do you land? Start saving on cell service with Mint Mobile.
Well, it's only important if you like money. If you don't like money, then stay where you are. If you do like money, you can get this stuff. It's absurdly cheaper than anything else. It works well. And if you want to throw your money away, that's your business. But I don't think most people do, not given what's going on now with the price of gas and everything else people are faced with. 4.2% inflation, a good idea to save some money somewhere. You could do it right here.
Boy, that's good. You know, James, that's really a good thing. If you do not like money, don't get Mint Mobile. If you like Mint money, get Mint Mobile. You know, it is a perfect approach. Unfortunately, traditional big wireless carriers, they like your money too. So if you're tired of spending hundreds on crazy high wireless bills, bogus fees, and free perks that cost you more in the long run, then a premium wireless plan from Mint Mobile for $15 a month might be right for you. Every month you wait is money that could be in your pocket, and we've seen how quick the savings add up with Mint Mobile. So stop overpaying for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. We all deserve affordability, and Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. It's easy. Bring your own phone and number. Activate with eSIM in minutes and start saving immediately. There are no long-term contracts, and there's no hassle. It's time to ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. With service and a price like that, we strongly recommend you make the switch. We might not be the most tech-savvy, a little bit of an understatement, but James and I could handle it easily. The website is incredibly simple to navigate, and we were able to get, you can get down to business in no time. That's when you know that we had to get our kids and grandkids using it too. Like all of you, they have a lot more important things to spend their money on. So if you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/war room. That's mintmobile.com/war room.
The link is in our show notes. Upfront payment of $45 for a 3-month, 5-gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customer offer for the first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. Now for our listener questions. James, I'm going to start you off with a couple of Louisiana questions. Nathaniel in Shreveport says Republicans are talking about hosting a midterm convention in Dallas in 2026. I didn't really know that. Should Democrats be doing the same?
I just think they should. I think we have such a stable of really good candidates, potential candidates, all of them now. I think anything that the Democrats can do to showcase their talent is just a really good idea. Things can go wrong, and you can have all kinds of extraneous things happen to go wrong, but things should really go right. I don't think things could go wrong for a Republican mini convention. I think they're too divided. Trump is just too dominant and becoming increasingly unpopular. I don't think anybody wants to be seen at it. I really don't. But I'm for any chance that we have to showcase the candidates we have up and down the ballot. If a midterm convention can do that, so much the better.
Yeah. Our old friend John in Gurnee, Illinois, notes that Michelle Obama recently said America isn't mature enough to elect a woman president. Grumbling from inside the Democratic Party is the next nominee should be a white male. I disagree with Michelle Obama. We had two tests, Hillary Clinton in 16 and Kamala Harris in 24. Frankly, they both ran pretty poor campaigns. If Hillary had run a better campaign, she would have won. I think even Harris might have won if she had distanced herself from Biden earlier, although I don't think she's a great candidate. And I think there are women out there, I would mention Alyssa Slotkin off the top of my head, who could win. But I don't think we ought to worry a great deal about whether the next nominee is a black woman or a white male or anything else. We ought to worry about the next nominee who would be the best nominee and the best president to stave off all the damage that Donald Trump has done.
So, first of all, the Democratic is not going to, nor should it stop nominating females in non-white candidates. And, you know, as Hillary actually won the popular vote by more than a little bit, Harris ran a status quo campaign when people were looking for something different. And I don't buy that. Obama is the only president since Eisenhower to get 50% twice in terms of do we have to nominate a white male? So what we need to nominate is really good candidates. And I think that the Democrats are in a favorable position now because they're starting embracing a lot of them is the winning is everything philosophy. We don't give a shit what gender you are, what race you are, what your sexual orientation is. Can you win the goddamn election? And if you can, we're interested in you. If we can't, we're not. Yeah, it's just that simple. I really believe that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. James, we're going to stick with your state. Christopher in New Orleans asked you, this is a question that I think you might enjoy. Did Mitch Landrieu miss his moment to run for the Senate in Louisiana? Why doesn't he find a way to get back on the national scene? Christopher says we need him.
Well, I agree, and I agree with the fact that he shouldn't run for the United States Senate. I just don't think that's an error, and at the time that decision was made, was very feasible. Now, in the way Louisiana set up, it's very hard to see us electing a Democratic senator, although I think Mississippi will, I think Texas will. But I think it made right there, and I'm not 100% sure Mayor Landrieu has exited the national stage. Let's stand by and get through the midterms and see where we are this time in 2027. I don't know this, but I think there's some chance you'll hear more from it.
Mm-hmm. He's an enormous talent that ought to be utilized in any way possible. Robert in Beverly Hills, Michigan. Did you know there was a Beverly Hills, Michigan, James?
You know, I think I did, but I think I did.
Robert, we're going to find out where it is.
says every day, Caroline Leavitt steps up to the podium and lies to all of us about what the president's doing. Is it possible for the Democratic Party to get a spokesman to hold a daily presser like that? Someone who's really good, like Jen Psaki or Tim Miller? Robert, no, because basically that's what a White House press secretary has that forum, whichever party is in control. Democrats can do better, however, with the people they put forward. I have said many times that I think that Chuck Schumer is a good Senate leader and a lousy outside force. He should stay away from the television cameras the same way Harry Reid did. But there are all kinds of attractive Democrats to put out there. You don't have to get an outside person. You can get Jason Crow. You can get Alyssa Slotkin. You can get all sorts of people. Because as James said earlier, there is more great talent in the Democratic Party. We just sort of put the people who are talented outside.
I agree. There was a book, an article, the greatest first sentence I've ever written. Hello, he lied. Okay, that's the Trump administration. They lie about everything. I mean, they even lie about hello. All right. And why? And, you know, Caroline Leavitt, the presidents watch what the press secretary said. I mean, they really do. And when she goes out and lies, she's getting complimented as way to go, way to go. You told them, you know, they don't need the truth. Who the hell needs the truth? And so she's doing exactly what she's supposed to do.
Yeah. You know, he sold her down the river the other day. He said his bad poll numbers, which he usually denies having, was basically due to her. The one thing you know, when there's trouble, Trump will not blame Trump. So,
there's no things about this. How many, let's get her a Caroline Leavitt sign, did you see? Not too many.
James, this is a tough one. This is Jeff in Portland, Oregon. It really is a tough one. Gavin Newsom has been quoted as saying Israel is an apartheid state. Other politicians have and continue to refuse AIPAC money. Will those trends alienate Jewish voters in the 28 presidential election to the benefit of Republicans?
You know, it might sound, but the problem is that Israel used to really try to have a PR campaign. They'd give you talking points, and they don't even try anymore. And when Israel in the United States, I want to see, we're going to ask Jim Gerstein, what is the favorable, unfavorable opinion of the state of Israel among Jews under 35? And their behavior is making it very, very hard for people who are sympathetic to them, who've traditionally supported them. It's making it hard to not and understand. You can be against the government of Israel and you can be for the state of Israel. But that's a distinction that gets blurred a lot. But there is a decline in support, and Democratic Party decline full across the board in the United States, particularly among younger people, even younger Jews. And part of that responsibility actually lies with the state of Israel, because they're not trying to convince anybody.
And Netanyahu, yes.
And Netanyahu, yes. The state, the government. He's the head of government. He's not the head of state.
You know, they passed legislation the other day that said that basically if a Palestinian kills an Israeli settler, they can be hung. They can face the death penalty. But if a Israeli settler kills a Palestinian, it wouldn't really affect them. I mean, that's not what a country as great as Israel should be doing. It really is not. And I think people are increasingly turned off. They can change that. But it's really been difficult.
I agree. In most of the blame, I think, for the anti-Israeli sentiment in the United States can be attributed to D.B. Netanyahu's government.
Yeah.
And the statements and everything else. And you got to try. They don't try. They don't care. They don't try to get you to like them.
Yeah, and you know, there is a much smaller pro-Israeli group, J Street, which is much smaller, but AIPAC has basically become much more of a conservative Republican organization. And J Street is pro-Israel, anti-Netanyahu. And you know something? They're starting to attract more attention from politicians, and maybe they will grow more. Go ahead, James.
No, I want to just say I hope that J Street grows and continues to grow, because I think it's a very compelling and good organization.
Yeah, it sure is. John in Sonoma, California, says, isn't Illinois Governor Pritzker's Project 2029 the perfect campaign for 2028? Criminal prosecutions, et cetera, fight, govern like a sane person, pretty smart. You know, I heard Governor Pritzker last Saturday night at the Gridiron Dinner. It's about the second or third time I've heard him in the last couple of months. I came in before the first time thinking, you know, not terribly impressed. I don't know why, just a feeling. He's impressive. He's much better than I thought. And if you want to list, however you want to rank them, the top tier candidates, that wouldn't be a small field. It would probably be four or five, maybe more like seven or eight. I'd put Governor Pritzker in that category, James.
I go back to the level of talent in the party. It's just breathtaking. And that's just another example. And, you know, he's very, and he's got his business in order. I said, I think it was on his show 5-6 weeks ago, that I thought he was a real comer. If I got him at 12-1, I'd probably take him. There's no one person that is the favorite to win a Democratic nomination. And somebody's going to win, and somebody could be him, but there could be a lot of other people. The other guy, and I could give him a shout out, that's just making an impact out there and drawing crowds and getting interest, is our friend Rahm Emanuel. Rahm is... He's got something going out there. I don't, you know, whether or not that translates into being a presidential nominee, I don't know, but he's one of the early winners so far. He's been saying a lot of smart, common sense things.
Well, I'm dubious on that, but I'll tell you who I'm not dubious on is Andy Beshear, who's also doing that and saying a lot of things that, you know, he's certainly in that category. Stephen Burbank, California. This is a difficult one. He says Congress really holds the sole power to formally declare war. And when the military attacked Iran on Trump's orders, did the military follow an illegal order?
No. I don't think so. There have been any kind of military incursions that have not had a declaration of war. And a military officer or a soldier he can't sort that out. He gets an order, they got to follow it. Yep. And they may not like it, may not be what they want, but, you know, that what's going to happen if they get an order to bomb these desalinization plants, which would clearly be a war crime. And one thing to think about is if these people engage in war crimes, and they're indicted in an international court. If I was the next Democratic president, I wouldn't protect them. Go get the ass and try.
I don't think we belong to the international court, James, which would make it hard. It doesn't mean they can't indict the president, but it would mean this president couldn't.
If I were president, I wouldn't protect them. If I thought that the indictment was legitimate. The people that tend to be the most for kind of rules of war and torture and that kind of stuff are actually senior military officers. These guys are in a really tough pickle right now, but I've been defending, and I don't think they have any choice but to follow orders. As the order might be.
I concur. Listen, we love these questions. As I've told you a number of times, the hardest thing, Dan Max sends us a whole list of great questions, and then it's hard to pick which ones. So if we didn't get to yours this week, please get to ours next week. And if you accuse me of having a soft spot for John in Gurnee, Illinois, I plead guilty. So anyway, everybody, keep them coming, okay? Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Quince, Green Chef, and Mint Mobile in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them. When you do, you help make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You also can find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. And remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.